Welcome back, everybody. We are on the way to one of the saddest days on the Jewish calendar. Tisha B'Av is coming up next week. It'll take place Wednesday night through Thursday. Tisha B'Av literally means the ninth day of the month of Av, the Hebrew month of Av. And on Tisha B'Av, we commemorate the fact that among many national tragedies in Jewish history, primarily the main events that we are commemorating are the destruction of both holy temples, Beit HaMikdash, which stood in Jerusalem at the Temple Mount. If you've ever been to Jerusalem, you've gone to the wall. The wall, the Western Wall, is the outer retaining wall of the Temple Mount compound. So beyond that wall, over the top, was where the Beit HaMikdash stood. This was ground zero for Jewish spiritual practice, Jewish religious practice. This was a place that all Jews would come to three times a year minimum on the major holidays. And ever since it's been destroyed, the first one was destroyed, then 70 years later, a second one was rebuilt, and then that was destroyed. Ever since they've been destroyed, we have been in a state of exile. We've been dispersed throughout the diaspora, and we really do not have the full-fledged Judaism, the full-fledged Jewish practice without that. So much of Judaism centers around the temple, around the Beit HaMikdash, and the various laws and the various mitzvahs that we can do only in the presence of the Beit HaMikdash and only in the land of Israel. And so ever since then, it's really been a very diluted form of Judaism. And we hope and pray and we await the coming of Mashiach, where the temple would be rebuilt once more for the third and final time. And Judaism, in its fullest sense, will be able to be practiced once again. And until then, we mark this day of Tisha B'Av with fasting, extra prayers, and in general, the period of time leading up to the ninth of Av, to Tisha B'Av, considered a time of mourning, as we commemorate the events and the days leading up to the actual destruction. And so this is a time when we can focus on what Judaism has to say on processing pain and dealing with loss and grieving and so on. Of course, it's on a national scale. We're not necessarily addressing in our mourning and in our grief personal tragedy and personal loss, but certainly there are lessons to be drawn from this period of time for everybody's own personal journey. So I want to read with you a bit of Talmud. And the bit of Talmud that we're going to read is going to challenge the very notion of grief, and is going to challenge how we typically process loss. And, you know, you really have to have an open mind for this adventure, because I don't think that this bit of Talmud is going to come across as the sort of typical advice that you hear when someone's going through a difficult time. Without further ado, let's begin. The Talmud at the end of Tractate Makot, shout out to Lev, who studied the entire Makot this year. You know who you are. The end of Makot, it says that it once happened that Rabban Gamliel, Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah, Rabbi Yehoshua, and Rabbi Akiva were walking towards Jerusalem. And as they got to the point of Mount Scopus, Har HaTzofim, and from there they were able to see the Temple Mount, and they saw that it had been destroyed. I mean, they knew it had been destroyed, but they came across it once again. And they saw the site of the destruction, the desolation. They tore their garments in mourning, which is the halachic practice that whenever you see the destroyed Temple Mount, you're supposed to express your grief by tearing your clothing, the way we do when someone, a loved one, passes away. When they arrived at the Temple Mount, the Talmud continues, they saw a fox that emerged from the site of the Holy of Holies. Holy of Holies, without getting into too much detail now, the temple was constructed in such a way where there were sections of the temple where you got progressively more and more restricted areas, and less people were allowed in. So at the very outside, external sections, anyone who was in a state of ritual purity could enter. And then there was a section where only the Kohanim, only the priests who served in the temple could enter. And in the most holy most restricted section, called the Holy of Holies, or in Hebrew, Kodesh HaKadashim, the only person who was allowed to go in there was the Kohen Gadol, the high priest, the chief of all the priests, and he was only allowed to do that once a year on Yom Kippur. Other than that, no one ever walked in there. So it was really the ultimate pinnacle of holiness of the presence of God, and for that reason it was totally restricted. Nobody else was ever allowed in there, and even the Kohen Gadol could only go in once a year. And so they see a fox emerging from the site where the Holy of Holies used to stand. You know, like you would see any animal roaming around rubble or any kind of random dump. And they began weeping. They all began crying. Rabbi Akiva was laughing. Can you imagine? So they said to him, "Why are you laughing?" So Rabbi Akiva said to them, "Why are you crying?" Of course, how does a Jew answer a question? With another question. They say, "Why are you laughing?" He says, "Why are you crying?" So they said to him, "It says in the Torah about this place that somebody who is not a priest who approaches this place and comes inside shall die. You're liable to the death penalty if you enter that space without authorization. And now foxes walk in it. Should we not cry?" So there's the most humiliating thing in the world. Everything's been turned upside down. So Rabbi Akiva said to them, "That is why I'm laughing. Because it is written in the prophecy of the prophet Isaiah, it says, 'I will take to me faithful witnesses to attest,' God says. Who are the faithful witnesses? Uriah the priest and Zechariah the son of Zechariah the son of Yevarechya." Now, what is the connection between Uriah and Zechariah? So he says, Uriah was a prophet who talked about, who prophesied during the first temple period. Zechariah prophesied during the second temple period. So what is the, how can they be connected? They're too far apart to have anything to do with each other. They lived hundreds of years apart. So what the verse is doing here is saying that the fulfillment of the prophecy of Zechariah, the later prophet, is dependent on the fulfillment of the prophecy of Uriah, the earlier prophet. What does that mean? What does Uriah say? "Therefore, for your sake, Zion shall be plowed as a field, Jerusalem shall become rubble, and the Temple Mount as the high places of a forest." That was the earlier prophecy, which means that this is a place where foxes go, just like any forest. This was the prophecy of Uriah, which came first. In the second, later prophecy of Zechariah, it is written, "There shall yet be elderly men and elderly women sitting in the streets of Jerusalem." In other words, Jerusalem will be rebuilt and things will be restored to the way they were, including the temple. Now, Rabbi Akiva continued, "Until the prophecy of Uriah with regard to the destruction of the city was fulfilled, I was afraid that the prophecy of Zechariah would not be fulfilled because they're linked." So if you don't see the first phase of the process happening, how can you know with any confidence that the second phase is happening? But he said, "Now that the prophecy of Uriah was fulfilled, and we see that Jerusalem, Zion has been plowed like a field, Jerusalem is rubble, Temple Mount is the high places of a forest, all that is true, to the point where you see foxes running around in the place of the Holy of Holies. So if the prophecy of Uriah was fulfilled, then we know that the prophecy of Zechariah remains valid and will ultimately come true. And Jerusalem will be rebuilt." And so the Gemara ends by saying, the sages told him, "Akiva, you have comforted us. Akiva, you have comforted us." They found great comfort in this message of Rabbi Akiva. In other words, Rabbi Akiva was laughing and they didn't understand. How can you look at what's going on? How can you see all this terrible, terrible destruction and so much pain and so much humiliation, and so much loss? Where do you find any happiness? Where do you find any laughter? What are you laughing about, dude? Don't you realize how bad this is? And he tells them, it's exactly the destruction that I see in front of me is actually the basis for my laughter, for my hope. What's going on over here? Let's unpack this. First of all,
First of all, why is it necessary for, why does Rabbi Akiva ask them, why are you weeping? Does he really not know why they're crying? Does anybody need to explain why they would cry at the sight of such a disaster? The temple's been destroyed, why wouldn't you cry? What kind of question is that? So, of course, they knew the temple had been destroyed. That wasn't anything new. That had already happened, and they had been aware of that. What triggered their crying was they saw, you know, it may be something that, you know, God ordained that we have to do, we have to go through. Fine, we can accept that. But why does it have to be to such a degree of humiliation? I mean, it's bad enough the temple's destroyed. Do you really have to have animals walking around there like it's nothing special? Can we just leave it alone? This is just adding insult to injury. This is putting salt on the wound. And that pain stabbed them and really hurt. And so that's the idea of why they're crying. And in response to that, and almost in 180 degree opposite of that, Rabbi Akiva looks at the same exact scenario. They're both standing in the same place. They're both looking at the same situation. And the rabbi's crying makes total sense. We can all relate to that. We can all understand why they would break down in tears in the face of such a disaster, in the face of such loss. But that Rabbi Akiva could find the wherewithal and find the strength to not only look at the present moment, which is really what this is about, but to look at the bigger picture and where this is going in the future and see signs of hope, even in the midst of the destruction, this is something out of this world. This is something supernatural. And like I mentioned, this is what it boils down to. How do you view life and reality? Do you look at the current moment only? Do you look at the present and say, this is what is, this is all we have to go by? And whatever the present is how you're going to live and react. So if the present moment is good, you're happy. If the present moment is not so good, you're sad. Or can you zoom out and see the bigger picture? And you can see how life is a continuum and life is a process of multiple events that build on each other. And in order to get to somewhere, sometimes it's necessary to go through a down, a descent, in order to get to the ascent. And in general, that is one of the most amazing teachings that we have in Judaism. Concept of Yerida Letzorech Aliyah, that the descent is there for the purpose of the ascent. When a person fails at something, ultimately it's only there. They have the capacity, they have the potential to turn it into a positive by taking the lessons from it. As the saying goes, either you win or you learn. Whatever happens to you in life, you either win or you learn. And if you learn, then you also won. Everything can really be part of the ascent, even the descent, and especially the descent. The lower the descent, the higher the ascent that comes after that. You take a few steps back and you start running, all of a sudden you can leap higher than if you just stand in one place and take a jump. A few steps back can trigger you and launch you further. Same thing with personal failure, personal loss, or national failure, national loss. The only way we can get to a greater and grander and more permanent temple than we ever had before, unfortunately, the only way to get there is by destroying the second temple. If we want to get to the third temple, you have to destroy the second. If you want to mature into the next best version of yourself, the current version of yourself has to go. And in that process, there's some grief, sure, there's some loss. You're neither here nor there, maybe at this point. You've grown out of the old you. You haven't yet fully come into the new you. But if you can see that that's the point, if you can see that even as you're going through the destruction of what was, it's part of the process of becoming what will be, then even in a moment of destruction, you can laugh. Even in a moment of pain, you can smile. Again, this is not necessarily the typical approach that most people have to dealing with pain and loss. Pain and loss can be very, very overwhelming. It dominates our consciousness. You go through a tragedy, you go through a loss, it's all you can think of, what you lost. You don't have what you used to have, whether it's a loved one or other forms of loss. And that's true, and that's valid, and that's only too normal. Yet at the same time, it really is true that there is forward motion, forward progress, and potential for growth in every single stage, even when there's a loss, even when there's a tragedy, even when there's pain. You can see it in so many different ways, in so many different areas, how a descent and a loss is really just a necessary step towards growth and what could become the greatness that could be waiting for us on the other side. This is part of why Rabbi Akiva told them that we were told by the prophet that Zion will be plowed like a field. Or more accurately, this is why the prophet uses that analogy of Zion will be plowed like a field. Why would you compare the destruction of Zion, the destruction of Jerusalem, to the plowing of a field? On one hand, makes sense. When you plow a field, everything's turned upside down. It's a mess. There's nothing constructive. There's nothing productive in that moment. It's completely destroyed. When you see a freshly plowed field, all you see is dirt that's been turned upside down. And that's what it looks like when you destroy a city. Plowed like a field. But that's only on the surface. Because everybody understands that when you plow a field, yeah, right now you sort of destroyed the earth. You know, you turned it upside down. But everybody understands that that's just a necessary step in order to get the ground ready for planting. Without plowing, you can't really plant anything. If you just dump seeds on flat earth, nothing's going to grow. So you must plow. And because you plowed, now the seeds can enter into the earth and you can grow, and soon enough you'll have a field full of corn, wheat, whatever. A field full of crops. And when the prophet says that Zion will be plowed like a field, what he's saying is, it's a similar idea. You're going to see a city destroyed, but it's not just destruction for the sake of destruction. It's a constructive destruction. It's like plowing a field, which is really just a setup for the growth that comes after. So when any one of us are going through a moment of loss and we feel like we've just been plowed like a field, we feel like we've gone through something where everything that we were in love with and everything that we were happy with has been turned upside down. It's true. It's true. And at the same time, it's also true that that's just a setup. It's a necessary setup to move into the next phase. If we would never destroy the status quo, we would never be able to grow into something greater. We would just stay that way, stay in the status quo forever. The only way to get to the next level, especially if it's a big leap forward into the next level, not just an incremental growth, is that status quo has got to go. And if we could just be patient enough in that process to hold the sense of anxiety, of, oh my God, where's everything going? Everything's disappearing. Everything's gone. And wait, there's more to come. There's better. The best is yet to come. We'll be able to laugh as well, even in the face of tremendous pain. Thanks for listening.